What is good, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Kevo Bands Hoops Podcast. Man, I'm back at it again today, Monday, June 6th. As always, I hope all you guys are doing well out there. The world has been as crazy as it has ever been, so I'm praying for your guys' mental health. Hopefully, all you guys are staying in tune with yourself, with your family members, checking on your loved ones. And I just want to say, understand that you are here for a reason. Please make the most of it. Every single day is an opportunity to get better, to improve yourself, not only for yourself, but for the people around you, because the only way that you can make change in this world is by starting off with yourself. So just realize you are here for a reason. You have a purpose. You mean something in this world. Figure it out and go from there. I promise you it is important, and you will feel much better about yourself when you learn what that reasoning and purpose is, man. But I want to get right into our topics of today. I got two topics I want to cover. The first one, of course, is currently the NBA Finals going on. I want to talk about this real briefly. I'll just say, going into this series, I actually predicted the Warriors in six in this series, and I'm sticking with that prediction. As of right now, as I'm currently speaking, the series is tied at one apiece. Boston took game one, where they pretty much just went absolutely crazy in the fourth quarter, outscoring the Warriors 40 points to 16 points. Al Horford had one of his best games of his entire career, arguably. Derek White has been sensational. Jason Tatum, even though he struggled scoring the ball, he was still able to impact the game in other ways. And that's what I appreciate about some of the top players in the NBA like that. To me, it's more than just scoring, man. You have to be able, and Bradley Beal just had a crazy rant that went super viral where he was preaching about, you have to be able to impact the game in more ways than just scoring. And that's what the best players in the league do, from LeBron James to Giannis to Steph to now Jason Tatum. You have to be able to do more than just score. And I was glad to see that even though Tatum's jumper wasn't falling off shots that he usually makes and takes, he didn't let that waver his confidence. You know what I'm saying? You didn't see him shrugging his shoulders. You didn't see him pout. He just made plays for other guys. And Jaylen Brown, man, I don't know what it is about Celtics fans, but it feels like they love to just put Jason Tatum on this pedestal and forget that Jaylen Brown is right there as well. And I'm not mad at them for putting Tatum on a pedestal. I'm not a big fan of it because I still think he's young and still has more areas of his game to improve, and we haven't even seen his prime yet. But Jaylen Brown is just as good as Jason Tatum. He's been phenomenal in these playoffs. He's had some big time moments so far in these playoffs, and he's always been a dog. And I just don't understand why Celtics fans don't give Jaylen Brown his proper due, but that's another conversation for another day. He had an excellent game one. And so in game two, the script pretty much flipped in game two. So it was close all the way until pretty much like the end of the first half. More so in the second half, the Warriors just blew it open. Like, Steph Curry was amazing. Jordan Poole started to find some things, even though he was kind of struggling when the game was tight. You know, once the lead got larger, his confidence started to grow. And really, the Warriors just put their foot on the gas, defensively especially, too. Steph Curry was amazing defensively, sliding his feet, making active plays. He's taking major leaps and bounds defensively, Steph Curry, that is. Like, he's been an excellent defender throughout the course of his career. I don't like how a lot of people try and make it seem like he was a weak defender. Like, in 2015, when they won their first title, Steph Curry wasn't the worst defender. Like, or let me not say it like that. He wasn't a terrible defender. The thing with Steph was that he just happened to be the worst defensive player on an elite defensive team. When you wanted to hunt for mismatches against the Warriors at their peak, you wanted to go at Steph Curry because you know you can't go at Draymond Green, you can't go at Klay, you can't go at Iguodala. And so they just presented too many issues, and you had no other choice to go at Steph. Also, too, because he's the smallest dude on the court for the Warriors at times. So you want to attack the smallest dude because, of course, you're going to have an advantage. But Steph was amazing in this game, too, defensively. In the Warriors as a whole, Draymond Green was doing exactly what he was supposed to do. And pretty much, again, they put their foot on the gas and they are not looking back. So when it comes to the rest of this series, because I think this series probably could go seven again, even though my prediction is Warriors in six, I would not be surprised whatsoever if this series happens to go all the way to a seven-game series. These are my questions moving forward for both sides. The first one, let's start with the Warriors. Can Klay Thompson put it together? Because Klay has been struggling. In this win in game two, he shot 4 of 19 from the field. And I want to give the Celtics defense a lot of credit because they're forcing him to not settle for three-point shots. And so I think the biggest thing for Klay, the biggest adjustment he's going to have to make is that because the Celtics do a great job of running three-point shooters off of the three-point line, Klay is going to have to fall in love with that one dribble pull-up. It's going to be there every single time. The three-point shot is not going to be there because you look at the Celtics in their last series where they played against my Miami Heat, they did a phenomenal job. And I honestly think this is a big reason to why they won that series and are in the NBA Finals right now. They did an amazing job of shutting down Max Strus. Max Strus is an intricate part of the Miami Heat offense. And if he's not making shots, it really closes up everything for everybody else except for Jimmy Butler. So with that, the Celtics are used to these high-volume three-point shooters. Obviously, I'm not going to sit here and compare Klay to Max Strus. I know Klay is on a different level when it comes to shooting, but I'm just saying the point still stands that they're used to and accustomed to guarding these elite three-point shooters. And so Klay is going to have to fall in love with that one dribble pull-up because he's not the greatest at getting all the way to the rim. He can sometimes, but it's not really his game. Like, once Klay puts the ball on the ground, as a defender, I'll be honest, you've more than likely done your job. And so I think that's going to be the biggest thing. But with that, leads me to my next question about the Warriors, is that if Klay is not able to step up, who is it going to be? Because as I mentioned, more than likely it's going to have to be between three guys. It could either be an individual or as a committee between Jordan Poole, Andrew Wiggins, and Otto Porter Jr. And Jordan Poole concerns me because, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, he has only been playing good when the Warriors have a commanding lead. Like, he was not hooping until the Warriors were up double digits, like when his confidence just skyrocketed. But in these close games, in game one and game two, like the first half of game two, Jordan Poole did not look that great. Like, he just didn't. And so I think that is big for the Celtics defensively, but that's also has to be a key point of emphasis for the Warriors offensively too, because they need Jordan Poole to score some buckets. And Jordan Poole kind of struggled in the Mavericks series too a little bit. And sometimes, you know, he was kind of off and on versus the Grizzlies as well. So, like, they're going to need him to turn it up. They need him to figure it out. And to be fair to Jordan Poole, this is the best defense that the Warriors have seen in this postseason run. So I get it. But he has to make that adjustment and start to find his shot. And I think Steve Kerr is probably going to make that a point of emphasis moving forward. And then my thing, too, is that the reason I'm saying this is because I don't believe that Steph by himself can beat this Boston Celtics team. As great as Steph Curry is, I say it all the time, in my opinion, he is the greatest shooter to ever touch a basketball, to ever play in the NBA, which is the highest, you know, version of basketball. I think he's the greatest shooter, but I do not think, as great as his Celtics defense is, I don't think Steph could do it by himself. I really think he needs other people to step up. Obviously, you know what you're going to get when it comes to Draymond. He's not going to really look to score like that. He's going to assist and get other people involved. But Klay struggling, Poole is only really playing good when they have a lead. Wiggins, I can't ask too much out of Wiggins because he's been playing pretty good defense on Jason Tatum. So it's hard for him to get his legs right offensively when he's putting in so much work on the other end, trying to stop one of the best players in the NBA. So Otto Porter got to step up. I think they'll be able to figure it out. So that's all my questions concerning the Warriors. Now with the Celtics, here's a few of my questions. The first thing is, I have no idea what is up with these turnovers. Like, it is so weird because as a Michigan State fan, I'm going to tie Michigan State into this real quickly. Michigan State every single season starts off the year with a turnover problem, and it's usually because we play too fast. We're trying to get out in transition way too fast, and the chemistry just isn't where it needs to be. With the Celtics, I think the biggest thing is that sometimes they get too ISO heavy. I think that was a big problem that they had with Brad Stevens, where sometimes Jason Tatum feels like he needs to take over, or same thing with Jaylen Brown, and then they put themselves in this tough situations and they turn over the ball. And then it's just like, sometimes I don't understand what they are trying to do at all. You know what I'm saying? Like, they go away from the things that make them successful. And that's why I say this Celtics team is still very much so immature. And that should be scary for the rest of the league, because they still do have plenty of different areas where they can improve upon. And so I think they need to figure out this turnover issue, because it's deeper than just them playing an ISO situation, because it'll be like one game they have a turnover problem, and then the next game they bounce back, they don't turn it over, and then a couple games later they go right back to turn over the ball, and then they lose the game because they just have way too many turnovers. So I don't understand it. I don't know what needs to be fixed, but it's something that just has been a theme for the Celtics throughout the course of these playoffs. So they got to figure that out if they want to beat this Warriors team, because you cannot turn over the ball and give this Warriors offense more shots than they're already going to put up. So that's going to be a big time thing too. My next thing, and that kind of turns, you know, this kind of goes into that first question I have, is that are the Celtics capable of putting together two straight games of looking really good? Because it feels like, again, they'll have an amazing performance like they did in game one, and then game two, they just went super sloppy. If they're able to put together two really good performances, I think they can honestly hang banner 18, number 18, if they're able to do that. They haven't really done it as much in these playoffs, so that's going to be a big thing too. Another question is, what are they going to get from Marcus Smart on a consistent basis? I'm not going to judge Marcus Smart too harshly because he's been actually really, really good for the Celtics this entire season. But in last night's game, he had more turnovers than points. That cannot happen. That is inexcusable from your starting point guard in the NBA Finals. I know he's done a phenomenal job of helping lead the Celtics team to this point, but that just can't happen. Again, like, that's inexcusable. To have more turnovers than points, I know he's better than that. I'm not a big Marcus Smart fan, but I know Marcus Smart is better than what he showcased in this game. And then my last thing, and I hate to even ask this question, but I really have to ask this question because it's a fair question, is can Robert Williams hold up? And I'll say this right now. I love Robert Williams. I used to love watching him play at Texas A&M. He was a dominant player in the SEC. He's been probably the most important defensive player on this Celtics defense, and he's just great. He looked banged up in this game too, but he was still making plays defensively. But my thing is, can he hold up? Because I believe he tore, I can't remember, but it was either his MCL or his meniscus going into the playoffs. Forgive me for not remembering, but it's one or the other. He has some type of knee injury right now that he's playing through. And that was always the biggest knock on Rob Will, was that his health has not always been that good. And it's the same thing with Joel Embiid. Like, I love Joel Embiid. I've gone on the record saying that I would rather have Embiid on my team than the Joker out in Denver for whatever reasons. But I also have to be honest with myself too and say that Embiid is always hurt. Like, that's just Joel Embiid. Like, it sounds good to say, well, if Joel Embiid was healthy, but the fact of the matter is Joel Embiid is usually always hurt. He's more often hurt than he is not. And that's kind of like the same thing for Rob Will. So if Rob Will can stay upright and stay healthy, because I hope he does, because he had like a little bit of a scare in game two where Marcus Smart kind of just ran it or fell into his knee, that's going to help the Celtics a lot. So that's my only question. But again, enjoy the series. I firmly believe it is going to go six, if not seven games. I'm sticking with the Warriors in six. And that's just my little analysis of the current 2022 NBA Finals. But let's talk about something that I view as more important, and that is, coincidentally, the Utah Jazz. And I know it sounds crazy because I usually don't talk about the Utah Jazz unless it's something important, because I feel like the Jazz are the same thing every single season. They're a good, solid playoff team, but they're not necessarily a contender. And now it was announced on Sunday that longtime head coach for eight seasons, Quinn Snyder, is stepping down as the head coach of the Utah Jazz. He, over his eight seasons, he went 372 wins and 264 losses. That's a 58% winning percentage. In his own words, he came out with his own personal statement pretty much saying that he felt like it was time to step down and that they need a new voice in the locker room. And I kind of agree with him, because to me, the Jazz situation kind of felt like the Portland Trailblazer situation a couple years ago, where it just felt like it was stale. Like, Terry Stotts for the Trailblazers, the former Trailblazers coach, of course they have Chauncey Billups now. Terry Stotts was a good coach, but the Blazers just weren't going anywhere. And it just felt like they needed a new voice in the locker room. And I kind of feel like it's the same thing for Utah. Quinn Snyder is a good coach, and I firmly believe he is going to get another coaching opportunity in the NBA. But with the Jazz, they're just not going anywhere. And I think the biggest problem with the Jazz is that it's too many misfits on this team. And what do I mean by misfits? It's too many guys on this team that don't gel together. And that's also a testament to Quinn Snyder, Rudy Gobert, and Donovan Mitchell. But when you look at it, the moment that Joe Ingles tore his ACL, I think he tore it early in January, and then they traded him to Portland like a week and a half later, I knew it was a wrap for this version of the Utah Jazz, because Joe Ingles was the glue that held this team together. He was their best defensive player on the perimeter. Let me be specific about that. He was their best perimeter defender. He was one of their best off the ball guys, and he just felt like the leader of that team. And once they traded him, I knew things were only going to go downhill. And so you look at the rest of the roster, let's be honest. I like Mike Conley. His best days are clearly behind him. Donovan Mitchell, I'm not going to lie. I want him in Miami bad, but he's an undersized guard, shooting guard, that isn't really a playmaker. He's only good when he's your primary scorer, and he doesn't have to be the primary playmaker. Rudy Gobert, elite defensively. I think he gets a lot of slander and a lot of slack for no reason, because a lot of people always say, well, he gets played off on the court in the playoffs. And I used to be one of those people, I'm not going to lie. But the more I watched it, the more I understood is that the Jazz don't have one of the most important things in today's NBA, and that's big, tall, two-way wings that can guard and score. You look at the Celtics, they have Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. You look at the Warriors, they have Klay Thompson, Andrew Wiggins, Otto Porter. You look at the Miami Heat, they got Jimmy Butler. The Raptors, they got Pascal Siakam and OG Anunoby. The Bucks got Giannis and Chris Middleton. You need those big-time two-way wings to be competitive in the playoffs. Same thing with the Dallas Mavericks. You got Dorian Finney-Smith, Reggie Bullock. You need that. And the Jazz just don't necessarily have that. And then on top of that, their second best scorer is probably Jordan Clarkson. Nothing against Jordan Clarkson, because I like him. He definitely earned Sixth Man of the Year last year. But he's not what you want as your second option on a perennial playoff team. I'm going to just be honest with you guys. Like, I like his game. But even then, like, some of his buckets that he gets in the regular season don't necessarily translate to the postseason. And that's an issue. So, like, Justin Zanuck, who's the general manager, Ryan Smith, who's the owner, Danny Ainge, who's in the front office, everybody involved with the Utah Jazz front office is going to have a lot to deal with in the coming days, weeks, and months. And then the most disturbing thing, and I had a feeling this was going to happen, if you know me personally, I've been called this for a minute now, but Woj came out and tweeted, in his quote, Donovan Mitchell reportedly feels unsettled, unnerved, and wondering what it means for the franchise's future after the departure of Quinn Snyder from the organization. And so I've been saying Donovan Mitchell, to me, I don't know him. I've never been to Salt Lake City. I've never had any interaction with Donovan Mitchell in my lifetime. But I think Donovan Mitchell feels like it might be time for him to leave the Utah Jazz. And I'll be honest, it's no better place than Miami for Donovan Mitchell. But forgetting that aside, that's just me being a Heat fan. Forgetting that, I do think it's time, because I'm not one of those people that thinks Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert have some beef. Like, it's a lot of people that believe that those two dudes just clearly don't like each other. I do believe that they're not best of friends or whatever. And I also do believe that their games just don't gel together. As the two best players on a playoff team, their games don't mix. And I don't think that's a good remedy for success, even though they do make it look good in the regular season every single season. It just doesn't work together. Donovan's not a playmaker like that. He's thinking about scoring. And Rudy's not one of those dudes where you can just say, post up and get a bucket, because he needs to, you know, set a screen and roll or catch a lob or different things like that. So Rudy could definitely be better offensively. And I think, to me, if I were the Jazz, I would blow it up. To what extent, I don't know. I honestly probably would just trade Donovan Mitchell and just try and start to build around Rudy Gobert, because as long as you have Rudy Gobert, your defense is going to be above average. You know what I'm saying? You could put the pieces and fill the pieces in from there. And they do need to start drafting better, because their draft picks have been kind of iffy. And it's hard to draft in Utah, especially because you're always having success every single season. And so it's like you're only going to get later and later draft picks. Even though the draft is getting more and more talented each year, it's still hard when you're consistently trying to compete for a championship. So they're in a very tough spot. If I were them, I would trade Donovan, pretty much because Donovan is on the regular max contract. Rudy Gobert is on a super max contract. And if you know, if you scour the league, it's only a handful of teams that are capable of actually bringing in a max contract right now, because most teams are above the cap right now. I'm not a cap space guru or anything, but I do know that, and I've heard that from plenty of people to know that that's the current situation in the NBA right now. So again, personally, I would trade Donovan and build around Rudy, but if they're serious, they should really just blow it all up altogether and just trade Donovan and trade Rudy and then start from scratch, in my opinion, because I don't know. I think Woj tweeted who their potential candidates are to replace Quinn Snyder, but it's just a very, very weird situation in my opinion. So I honestly am curious to see what happens. I don't know if Donovan is going to request a trade. I think it would probably be smart for him to do that, because when you look at Donovan Mitchell, like, I'll be honest, like, he's just, I hate to say it, but he might just be too good for Utah. And I hate to put it like that because Utah has had some pretty good dudes, like Gordon Hayward at his peak was really good. Andre Kirilenko, you know, you had the Deron Williams and Carlos Boozer teams. Like, they've had some really, really good players, but Donovan, man, I just think he's built for a bigger market. I think he's built for bigger. Not even just saying the Miami Heat, even though, of course, I would love him in Miami because I think he's the perfect fit, and we could trade Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson, and some picks for him and probably another player. But I think it's time. I just think he needs to get out of there. I don't think him and Rudy Gobert are the match to be the two best players on a playoff team. And again, it's going to be a lot of things that are going to be discussed in the Utah Jazz organization in the coming time. I'm very interested to see where this goes. And we'll see, man. But as always, I appreciate you guys if you made it this far, man. Shout out to Nuts and Bolts Sports. I am a college basketball writer / podcaster / producer for Nuts and Bolts Sports. Go check them out on our Twitter, on our website, wherever you want to find them for all your sports news and needs. I promise you, Nuts and Bolts Sports has it all for you. Want to say a big shout out to also to my guy, Daniel Artest. I appreciate you for welcoming me to the 265 media team. Be on the lookout. I will definitely have some content coming out for them very, very soon. You guys have a blessed and great rest of your week and productive rest of your week. I will talk to you guys soon. As always, this has been another episode of the Kevo Bands Hoops Podcast. Please like, comment, subscribe, rate, review, and share. Be easy, stay safe, and as always, peace and love gone.